하이나 다 이제 로사비기나 내직 로릭 하고 두야지 양직 에 롭챔고 두야지 안데 데센틸이야 담보로 신다 당아지 이제 에 로틸이야 땡님만은 어떻게 롭챔 집에 기회 저 뭔가 사요로 된다 로틸에 되냐지 로틸에 소소기 에 고갑되는 게 라베하고 된다 심지어 탐지기 된다 산요고바 뉴아뉴아 저것도 우두 디토에게 된다래야 아니 내가서 낭 삼류기 루일 남자 간에간에도 진짜 되니게 로정시에 안에 직냠된 지야 산요고바뉴 들어 지인생 비게 아니 군어티네 삼바 생각도 시네 아니 직고도 해지로와
And good evening to everyone. So we come together now for the first weekend class, the first study group of this new year. And we're going to continue with what we started last year to look at the text Lodic, or awarenesses and knowers. So when we, in our time together, whether it was the weekends we looked at Lodic or the other classes we've had, we've accumulated already a huge store of virtue, of positive karma. And that karma, as well as what we've created in past lives, this has helped serve to create the conditions for us to come together again now. And coming together to hear the teachings of the Buddha Dharma are particularly important in that if we want to transform our minds and have a truly beneficial impact on others, we have to engage in the cultivation of the minds of the Buddha Dharma. And for that practice, the practice of the Buddha Dharma to be effective, we have to have a good understanding of the Buddha Dharma. So it's independent on understanding the Dharma well that our practice will be effective, our mental transformation will be effective, and thereby we'll have a transformative effect not only on ourselves, but also on all those that we come into contact with.
Chikosu Hare Dina Paradilya Jusit Gyunimuro Chiyanchik Matsu Chik Loya Mararwa.
The text we started at some point last year, we had two study group weekends on the text, but then due to other commitments, we haven't looked at the text as a group since the beginning of September. So quite a period of time has passed since we last looked at this together. The subjects that this topic in Tibetan is lodic, so it's two words, lo, which is awarenesses, and rik, which is knowers. So the text then is called awarenesses and knowers. Or to express that differently, we can say mind and knowers. And what this topic is about is coming to understand the wide variety of minds, as well as how the minds interact with or apprehend their various objects. So this text, it can be expressed in different ways, such as object and object possessors, awarenesses and knowers, but it's about how about the various minds and how they interact with their objects.
Nang samla membiki chi su so la so ba yu di ge cha sa yue ba le de ro cha sa yue ba la na ta yue che tam chi shi du ba cha sa la yue ba shi du ba le go le ta ni la de se ni che che de se ni che de ta yu di ge ha go han chi go ro ba ha go di di re di che che ha go xin gen de la lo si go lo di ge ji ba ge lo ge ta ni ga zu ge di di re di ma re se cha go ro ba ta chi su so la so ba ko ran zu ge su di ge yu di ko ran ha go ma kan ta ga zu
Yu all phenomena that exist, all existence, can be divided into those which are consciousness or minds, and those which are objects other than mind. So we can talk about a variety of external objects as well as internal minds or consciousnesses. So consciousness, minds, can be both an object as well as an object possessor. It can, with an object possessor being that which possesses, that which knows the object. So everything that is an existent, everything that exists, is an established base, and it can therefore be known by a consciousness, by a knower, by a mind. So it's mind that knows an object. Every mind has its own object. Other phenomena such as form or matter, this cannot know or realize an object. Consciousness or mind knows objects, knows objects. So here, there's a lot of terminology that's used. And another way of expressing this, so we have an object. That object is possessed or known by an object possessor, that which possesses its object. Or a consciousness, a mind, is what knows or possesses its object. Normally, when one hears about Lodig, awareness and knowers, those who have studied this text will immediately remember the sevenfold division of awareness and knowers, or the sevenfold division of Lodig. So this is something we are still to come to, but as we are looking at different ways of dividing minds, then we can mention here the sevenfold division of Lodig. So these are... I didn't write it down, so let me try and remember. So these seven then are direct perception, inferential cognizers, correct assumption, inferential cognizers, inferential, correct assumption, subsequent cognizers, so that's four, doubt, wrong consciousness, and I've missed one. And non-ascertaining awareness. So let me say them again. So we had direct perception, inferential cognizers, correct assumption, subsequent cognition, non-ascertaining awarenesses, doubt, and wrong consciousnesses. Generally, when one hears about this term Lodig, so just to say as the translator, I use the Tibetan more because more frequently Lodig rather than the cumbersome English awarenesses and knowers. So when we hear the term Lodig, if we've studied this subject, then usually our mind will recall the sevenfold division, because that is usually what one refers to. And within the sevenfold division, with these seven ways of dividing consciousness, then there will be many that we have, some that we don't have, and that there are times we have more of them, and other times less of them. Moreover, the sevenfold division can also be further subdivided.
Gansa 你那刚才的鱼节里的，刚才的那落马的落了有嘛？过刚才的鱼，好古古了哇！那地全部的地穷穷的地，有的有嘛？水好古古是鱼的好古古的，刚才也好古古的落个好古的，你个好古古了哇？现在你个鱼节里，刚才现在鱼节里鱼有，鱼里也都可能好古的鱼有吧？这是个嘞，先把这个鱼有的。
If you, with the English text in front of you, we are now going to go to the second page and look at object possessors. So object possessors, there are differing types. The first object possessor, that which possesses an object, is that of persons. So a person is what a person can know its object. A person can is what a person knows whether something is big or small, is this or is that. And a person itself can both be an object as well as an object possessor. But what a person is not is is consciousness or an awareness. A person is not consciousness. A person is not awareness. It's rather a non-associated composite. Another type of object possessor we have here as the third one is that of expressive sounds. So an expressive sound is, for example, the sound vase that expresses what an object is. So that is considered by many to be an object possessor, because it's through the expression of sound that the object can be perhaps identified. But this third division of expressive sounds, as the third division of object possessors of expressive sounds, is not accepted by all practitioners. Whilst many will say that object possessors are divided into three, others will not accept this third division, because they say an object possessor needs to also know its object. An expressive sound that is expressed, or that expresses a meaning, that does not know its object. So therefore, there are those who do not accept this third division of object possessors, namely expressive sounds. The division of object possessors, we mentioned briefly persons and expressive sounds, and then the remaining division is that of awarenesses, which encompasses most of this body of the text we'll look at. So just going a little bit further down on the page to the heading of awarenesses, we see awarenesses defined as a knower. So an awareness is defined as a knower, something that knows an object, that it's consciousness that knows an object, that realizes an object. That is the definition of awareness.
Mm-hmm. Wangbei Sheba, the Yi Sheba, Nijaguru, Wangbei Sheba, the Yi Sheba. The Wangbei Sheba is the Migi Wangbone part Jian Jeje, Yu Tong Sheba Jikje. Nayu Wangbone Jian Jeje, Yu Haku and Jahawa Sheba Jikje. Ji Wangbone Wangbei Jian Jeje, and Rodang, the Nigga, Rikhawa Sheba Jikje. Then Luigi Wangbei and the Jian Jeje, and Rakja. Jamba Zuba Jamba and Tawa di Hau King Sheba Sheba Nai Hongo, Gela, Wan Sheba, Wan Sheba.
So awarenesses can be divided, as we'll see, in many different ways. So one way that they can be divided is into sense and mental consciousnesses. So sense consciousnesses, of course, consciousness. Mental consciousnesses, of course, consciousnesses. So sense consciousnesses themselves have five subdivisions relating to the five senses. So there's the eye sense consciousness, or the visual sense consciousness, which knows visual objects. There's the ear sense consciousness, which is a consciousness that knows sound. There's the smell sense consciousness, which is a consciousness that knows smell. The taste sense consciousness, which knows taste. And lastly, there's the tactile sense consciousness, which knows physical objects, objects of touch. So these are the five sense consciousnesses. Then the mental consciousness is a consciousness that arises independence on its own unique empowering condition and is thereby able to know its object. The mental consciousness arises independence on its own unique empowering condition and it comes to know its object.
And in the Ranzugula to some done that won't be Sheva, not the Chasan Ranzugil, Yore, Kitty Nanzu, won't be Sheva Gigore, Zamzam Suptungore, Zamzam Tratugore, Hagore, Zamzam Manichi, Ro, the Yahoo, Zamzam and Tawi, Tawada, Tawada, the Ni Tawi, Jacet, Yahoo, Washing at the Gayovache. So now washing at the Yobas and Kitty Nanzugi, Shukche, the washing at the visiting quarter. Washing at the visiting.
These five sense consciousnesses, those of the consciousness relating to the five senses of sight, smell, taste, touch, and tactile, we have all five of these. And it's through the, and these five are regularly manifest within us. So we are seeing things, we are hearing things, we know if we are a bit hot or if we are a bit cold, we taste. So we have the all five of these sense consciousnesses that know the objects of the senses. And independence on these sense consciousnesses, many mental consciousnesses later arise, or rise independence. Many mental consciousnesses arise independence on the various sense consciousnesses.
Digi,
Digo San Chico Mason, then Oden in Jeppotu, the Yigi Shepherden in Jeppotu, Mintag, Migi Shepherd,
Migi Shepherd, the Metal Mason, and Ninjo Nangutungo, Migi Shepherd Tungo, Tongo, and Yigi Shepherd gave Medo de la Tonyagi to Bajia, then Medo de la Chape, Chapajia, Tisikiadi, and then the Nigi Jedi, Washigi Chisudane, Gigorwa.
To give an illustration, if we see a flower, or a beautiful object such as a flower, so we'll see this being an object of form, we will see it with our eye sense consciousness. So the initial engagement with the object is through the visual consciousness or the eye consciousness, and independent on that comes a variety of mental consciousnesses. So this beautiful flower appears to our eye sense consciousness. Independent on this object appearing to our eye sense consciousness, various mental consciousnesses will follow, such as, I want this beautiful flower. So attachment arises. So attachment then, and this wish of wanting the object. This is a mental consciousness which arises independent on the eye sense consciousness, which apprehends the object, in this case, a beautiful flower.
The
sequence relates to, of course, not just resulting in attachment arising, but also, for example, if we see someone whose face is through the facial expression, we see this person is not happy, this person is not in a good mood, then independence on our eye sense consciousness seeing this person appearing to the eye sense consciousness, then a variety of mental consciousnesses will arise, such as fear or aversion. These mental consciousnesses again come about independence on the preceding visual sense consciousness. And this works with all the sense consciousnesses. So, for example, if we hear music, so music appears to our ear sense consciousness, then our mental consciousness, attachments through our mental consciousness, attachments will arise or dislike will arise for that music. Or if we're speaking with someone, so our ear consciousness is hearing what is being said, or what is being said appears to the ear consciousness, ear sense consciousness. And if the person is saying pleasant things, pleasing things to us, then the relevant mental consciousnesses will follow from that. Or conversely, if a person is criticizing us or scolding us, then what is being said will appear to our ear sense consciousness, and independence on that, various mental consciousnesses will arise, disliking what is being said. And this sequence we apply to all these sense consciousnesses, all five of them, and it's through the sequence of our sense of objects appearing to our sense consciousness, and then a variety of mental consciousnesses following, that we have all this busyness of our mind, or all this over-conceptualization. This is a very common way, the most common way for our over-conceptualizing mind, our busy mind, to arise.
Ni ta mara mata chi pa mata ba sha ko re mata wa ni mi tong ma re ma thong wa na ma thong di chi su dang bi gi yu la cha pa da de la tang wa ju khong de ki ma re je sa am cho gi che ra ni su che ra ma nyen ba sha sha ba na ne pe ni su ya ko shi chi pe cha pa la ni su di ye ma nyen ba da ya khong ro la ya gi ni su di ye ma nyen ba sha ba cha na am cho hu ma ro wa gu mo de ha gu ko mo de ha mo ne
Dene Zumagona, Digi Jesu Jabigi, and Kondo and Chata Kimare, Dene Inza, and Dimachevina, Semlia, and Sem Babulia Ungres, and Jesa Dene Inza, won't be what ambassador, Migi, Diata, and Amcho in Jamara Nyadi, Pacabores, Dicavaina, Sosulia, and Namto Mulima, Malevan, Kondo and Duechada, Dene Naming Malevan, Sususim, and Shidi Ungres.
The purpose of this topic is to come to understand the Buddhist presentation of mind, and the purpose of that is to come to understand our own mind. So if we take the information that's given and we investigate it and we see whether it's valid or not, we take this information that we've been given now and we see if this sequence, if this works, if this, there's truth to this. And if one investigates in meditation, one will come to see that so much of our mental busyness comes about through this sequence. First through the doors of our sense consciousness, all this mental busyness arises. And what happens when we have this busy over-conceptualizing mind? Any mental peace we may have had is lost. And this is because minds of attachment and the various classes of attachment arise, or desire arise. Minds of anger, such as frustration, annoyance, hatred, or the minds of that class, just continuously, almost ceaselessly arise. So when we see the validity of this presentation, that this sequence does exist, and this is our actual lived experience, then we will look for a solution. What can we do about this? And the text presents the basic solution. The very first step is, if an object is destroying one's inner peace, one should separate oneself from that object. If that object is leading to undesired consequences, we should separate ourselves from it. And in this way, we close the doors of our sense consciousnesses. We close our eyes, we close our ears, and so forth. So this, we can understand. If something doesn't taste good, we don't continue to eat it. If some music doesn't sound good, we don't continue to listen to it. So we're closing our sense door. Likewise, if listening to the news is really upsetting us, maybe we shouldn't listen to the news when that happens. So this is the most basic way to deal with our mind. But the purpose here is to come to understand the workings of our mind, and that is done through this presentation here, seeing how through our sense consciousnesses arise, independent on what the objects that appear to our sense consciousnesses, come all these, this variety of mental consciousnesses, and these can and often do destroy our inner peace. But if we separate ourselves from these disturbing objects, then our mind is more relaxed, more spacious, more even and calm.
Bene Chadan Chava Dama Jegu Yule Matawa, Chadan Jegi and Jamanyamba. And Tadia Jige Sosugi and Devajata Gavi Samlo Yahu Jegi, Yudil Tau or what Pesero's Mats, Devro, and then Deni Diana, and the Jaro Nyamba in a and Jig Sanji Sunshueta and Chicken on Jugi Chiyuko, the Sosugi Muyanis to Timbi Deni Nyamba in a.
Through understanding this topic and investigating its validity in meditation, we'll come to see how this process works. What objects disturb us? What objects have a beneficial impact on our mind? then seeing what disturbs us, seeing what leads to our mind being overwhelmed with attachment and desire or anger and hatred, we'll want to turn away from those objects. It'll be quite easy to turn away from those objects because we'll see the resulting sequence that comes from engaging in them. Similarly, we'll also through this process of investigation come to understand which objects, as they arise into first our sense consciousness and then what impact they have on our mental consciousness, lead to happiness, lead to peace, lead to a more calm and spacious mind. And as we come to understand then which objects lead to happiness, those ones we'll want to engage with ever more. So through this process of analysis, we'll come to see what disturbs our mind, and we'll come to see what causes our mind to be calmer, more settled. We'll come to see what leads our mind to becoming more loving, more open-minded, more accepting of others. We'll come to see what leads our mind to becoming, coming to understand reality better, and thereby not being overwhelmed by whatever it is that we encounter. So this advice to close the doors, close the doors of the senses, of the sense consciousnesses, this should be understood as closing the doors of our sense consciousnesses to what disturbs our mind, to what leads to mental disquiet, that leads to mental turmoil. And rather we should open ourselves to that such as the teachings of the Buddha Dharma, to meditation. Open ourselves to those, because we will see through our experience that that is what opens our heart, opens our mind. So this is the way to approach what we're covering here. What I'm explaining right now, I hope you keep in mind, not just in this class, but the classes that will follow, because a text like this can seem a bit impenetrable, it can seem quite theoretical, but if you approach with intelligence, it's very practical. So further way to utilize the knowledge that is gained here is that as we're starting to know ourselves better, as we're coming to understand our minds better, we'll understand first of what are desired states, what is meant by happiness. That happiness isn't merely excitement, but happiness is peace and calm. And we'll come to understand then what is contrary to that. And that things that previously we saw as happiness is really just excitement and therefore distraction, a disturbed mind rather than a peaceful mind. And so this is how we'll progress. We'll first come to understand what is bringing harm, what is bringing benefits, and we'll close off turn away from what brings harm and embrace what brings happiness. And as we come do this more and more, we'll become more skilled within ourselves. And as we continue to get to know ourselves better and become more knowledgeable of the Dharma, more knowledgeable about ourselves, things that before we turned away from because we saw they disturbed us, actually will now no longer disturb us in the same way. Maybe still a bit, but not nearly as much as before. And this is because as we come to understand the Buddha Dharma better and apply it more skillfully and effectively to ourselves, we will become much more skilled in dealing with life's challenges and difficulties, and things that disturbed us before now will no longer disturb us in the same way. And then, for example, when one's been training one's mind for a while, when we encounter someone who's verbally abusive to us, perhaps speaks to us in quite a harsh manner, in the past we'll recognize that when people spoke to me in that way, they pushed my buttons and I responded with anger. Immediately anger arose and I almost certainly would have expressed it. But now we start to see some change within ourselves. We understand, we've come through understanding our own mind and how our mind works, we also can apply that to understanding how others' minds work. Through this knowledge and experience, we will not then take on this mere expression of sound. We'll understand it for what it is. We won't grasp at it with the same strength, giving it that power that we used to give it. We'll rather see that sound as something impermanent, fleeting, nothing worthy of grasping at and taking as truly existent. Moreover, and then thinking that way, that will also lead to our mind not becoming disturbed and therefore more spacious. Having more spacious mind means we can be more aware of the mental state of the person who's talking to us in this manner. We'll understand they are suffering. This harsh speech is not a reflection on myself, but a reflection on their inner world. It's a reflection that they are suffering. And in this way, not only are we not getting angry and upset by what is being said, but compassion arises within us for this person, the suffering person before us. So this now is a much more skillful way to deal with such a situation. And here we will see within ourselves that in the past, perhaps this person we struggled to deal with, so therefore we avoided them, because we saw that this person and the way they treat us leads to our mind becoming disturbed. So through seeing them or hearing what they say, this arising in our sense consciousness leads our mental consciousness to be disturbed, so therefore we avoided them. But now through our mental training, when we meet them, when we encounter them, we are able to deal with the same situation much more skillfully. And therefore, this person is no longer someone, an object, someone to be avoided, but someone we can engage with and benefit.
So
I encourage you then, meditation to look within yourselves and look for the sequence of an object appearing to the sense consciousness and then the resulting mental consciousnesses that follow. So this works, as was mentioned earlier, this is the case for all the sense consciousnesses. For example, if a particular fabric feels really good on the skin, then we come in contact with this feeling this, of the fabric through our tactile, it's a tactile object we come into contact with through our tactile sense consciousness, and this touch then, this feeling arises, the feeling of the fabric arises to our sense consciousness. From that comes the thought, I really like this, I want this, I want to wear this kind of fabric more and more often. So we see how desire, attachment arises in dependence on our sense consciousness coming into contact with the object. Same with smells, desirable smells, undesirable smells, and certainly with taste. When we taste a food that is delicious, we come into contact with the object through our sense consciousness, in this case the tongue sense consciousness, it tastes delicious, and immediately our mental consciousness, I want to eat more, and I want to eat this again and again. So we see this process. But more than the touch and the smell and the taste sense consciousnesses, the ones that have the greatest impact on us are what we hear and what we see, our ear sense consciousness and our visual sense consciousness. So when we hear something, we hear sound, and it appears to our ear sense consciousness, and then our mental consciousnesses get involved, and we think, oh, this is lovely music, or this is someone's talking very well about me, someone is praising me, someone's talking in accordance with my views, and we have all these pleasurable thoughts that follow. I like this person, I want to spend time with this person, I want to listen to this more, music more often. We have all these thoughts. And of course, the opposite is also the case. When we hear something that's not in accordance with our views, we hear something unwanted, aversion arises. So we need to be aware of this process, come to see how pervasive it is. And of course, with the visual consciousness too, it's really the visual and the ear consciousnesses, the eye and the ear consciousnesses, that we that seem to have the greatest or the largest number of impact on us, and the resulting mental consciousnesses. So this is something that we need to come to understand well. And when we see the validity of this and just how frequent it is, we'll see that not only do these variety of mental consciousnesses then arise, but from that we engage in a variety of actions. We want to engage with this object more or less. And from this we're doing many things or we're avoiding many things. We see this whole process, this whole sequence. And this is important to gain experience of, so that this knowledge isn't just theoretical but is practical, because we'll come to understand the workings of our mind. We'll come thereby to understand ourselves better, know ourselves better. Moreover, as one gains this experience of one's inner workings and how one interacts with the world around us and how that world around us has an impact on ourselves, the new practitioners who are meditators who are new to the Buddha Dharma, strong wish arises within them to separate themselves from the objects that cause such distraction. from the busyness of their home and their place of work. They want to separate themselves from this and be somewhere less that gives rise to less distracted minds. They want to go somewhere that's quiet and peaceful. They want to go somewhere where they don't see many desirable objects or objects of aversion, because they know their mind will be calmer, more peaceful, and easier to train. So in dependence on doing these prior meditations well, the wish arises in new practitioners to go into retreat, to separate oneself, to isolate oneself, and enter for a period of isolation, isolated from the worldly distractions, primarily visual and auditory, that disturb, that lead to the mental consciousnesses being so disturbed. And by isolating oneself, going into retreat alone, then one will have a far easier opportunity to tame the mind, to subdue the mind. So this is a process, that a sequence that happens through going through these meditations. So if you take the knowledge that's the information that's presented here, this knowledge that you're receiving, and you reflect on it well, then you'll come to understand the inner workings of your mind. You'll come to understand this process that independence on objects objects arising to our five sense consciousness, various mental consciousness come. And usually these are these over-conceptualizing minds, this busyness that we experience so. And as one reflects on this more and combines it with one's other knowledge in the Dharma, one will see from this over-conceptualization, one will come to understand better the harm that this over-conceptualization leads to. It's not merely a busyness, but one is keeping, one is regularly engaged with objects that are bringing harm to oneself. And one is not so engaged with objects that bring benefit to oneself. So one needs to combine the knowledge that's presented here and what one is studied elsewhere to understand better what does bring benefit and what does bring harm. Because then, with all this knowledge and experience here too, one will then with ease turn away from the objects that cause mental disturbance. There are objects that arise in to our sense consciousness and cause disturbance, because we'll understand what harms. Correspondingly, we'll understand what brings benefit, and we'll want to engage with those, because we'll see when they arise to our sense consciousnesses, our mental consciousnesses are those of virtue. So in this way, it becomes much easier to turn away from what leads one down the path of non-virtue or negative karma, and much easier to embrace that which leads to virtue or positive karma. But this way of being able to differentiate can only come about in dependence on studying well and reflecting on what one is studying repeatedly over a sustained period. If one doesn't do that, one will not come to understand what disturbs one's mind and takes one's mind in the direction of anger and the direction of attachment. One will not even understand clearly what is meant by a mind of happiness or a mind that is peaceful. And thereby one will not know what to turn away from, and in fact may well end up continuing to embrace objects that actually only lead to suffering. So therefore it's imperative that one gains knowledge and reflects on knowledge, because this is the process that leads to greater happiness, leads to greater virtue, and leads one to turn away from the causes that only lead to suffering. As mentioned earlier in our talk, awarenesses can be divided in many ways. So we've looked at one way to divide it into the five sense consciousnesses and the mental consciousness, so six, five sense and one mental consciousness. So this is one way to divide awareness. Another way, if we look back at the text, the bottom of the section on awarenesses, we'll see another division into valid cognizers and non-valid cognizers. So just like we can divide objects into things which are pleasurable or not pleasurable, good or bad, the awarenesses can be divided in many ways, those which are beneficial and those which are less so. Awarenesses can be divided in a different way, that into valid cognizers and non-valid cognizers. So the section then at the bottom of the second page is that of valid cognizers, and the definition of a valid cognizer is a new incontrovertible knower. The first term we see here is new. So this refers to the first moment that the object is realized by this cognizer. So it refers to the first moment that the object is realized by the cognizer. Within the presentation of the Buddha Dhamma, there are different philosophical schools, and in many ways they hold most things in common, but they have some important differences. So this definition here of a valid cognizer being a new incontrovertible knower is accepted by several Buddhist philosophical schools, but not all of them. So those who studied this some years ago, when he looked at tenets, about three years ago, will remember these schools. So this particular definition is accepted by three of the schools, the Sautrantikas, the Chittamatrans, and the Svatrantika Madhyamikas. So those three schools, the Sautrantika, Chittamatrans, and Svatrantikas, they accept this definition as it is. This is the definition they assert. Whereas two of the other schools, they accept a slightly different version. So the lower school, the coarser school, that of the Vaibhashika, they don't have the term knower. They say the definition of a valid cognizer is that it is new and incontrovertible. So that is the definition of the Vaibhashika. The Prasangika, the higher school, their definition of a valid cognizer is an incontrovertible knower. So they don't have the term new. So again, the schools that differ from this, the Vaibhashikas, don't assert the term knower, and the Prasangikas don't assert the term new. And to explain then why the Vaibhashika don't assert, don't use the term knower in the definition, and to say a valid cognizer is new and incontrovertible, is they say that a valid cognizer may be a knower, but is not necessarily a knower. A non-knower can also be a valid cognizer. Or to express this in English in a clearer way, so knower we can understand here as consciousness. So it doesn't, a valid cognizer, Vaibhashika say, the lowest Buddhist tenets say, doesn't have to be consciousness. They say that subtle form, a particular subtle form, can also be a valid cognizer. So for example, the eye sense consciousness will apprehend an object, and that can be a valid cognizer, but so too is the eye sense power. The subtle empowering condition, the subtle form, that too is a valid cognizer. So the Vaibhashika are unique in asserting, or alone in asserting, that the sense power, the subtle form, also can know or can realize the object. The text we're studying is not written from the perspective of the Vaibhashika, of this lowest Buddhist tenet. So therefore, the author of this text asserts a different definition, that of the Sautrantikas. And here the term knower is inserted to make the point that the Vaibhashika's understanding is mistaken, that a valid cognizer is necessarily a knower, is necessarily a consciousness. And in our definition here, we see two remaining terms, that of incontrovertible and before that new. So the term incontrovertible is in the definition of all Buddhists. All Buddhist schools assert that a valid cognizer is incontrovertible, which means that it realizes its object. So a valid cognizer necessarily realizes its object. So that's the meaning of incontrovertible. Then this text, which is not written to in accordance with the tenets of the highest philosophical school, the Prasangika, they have this third term, which for us is first, and that is new. So this is included here by the author so as to make the point that the Prasangika, the highest Buddhist philosophical school, in their opinion, the assertion of the Prasangika is mistaken, because they do not have the term new. So here, the insertion of the term new shows us that the author of this text is not writing from the perspective of the Prasangika. Rather, they are showing by including the term new that it's only the first moment that a object is realized, that is that cognizer is valid. Only the first moment. Each and every subsequent moment, the second and each subsequent moment, is not a valid cognizer, but a subsequent cognizer, and subsequent cognizers are not valid. So this is a point of disagreement between the highest Prasangika, the Prasangika school, which is the highest Buddhist school, and the other Buddhist schools, whether the first moment alone is a valid cognizer, or whether the subsequent moments are also valid cognizers or not. In brief, these three key terms here in the definition, new, incontrovertible, and knower, the term new shows that it's only the very first moment that an object is realized, that it is a valid cognizer. The term incontrovertible shows that the object is realized. And thirdly, the term knower shows that it has to be consciousness, only consciousness, that can realize an object. The valid cognizers, as we see at the bottom of the second page, can be divided into two: direct valid cognizers and inferential valid cognizers. As we see here in the text, we'll come to these later, but in brief, the difference between these two divisions of valid cognizer is that a direct valid cognizer realizes its object directly. It doesn't rely on a meaning generality. It's also new, and it doesn't rely on utilizing a correct reason. It doesn't need a correct reason, nor a meaning generality, or a mental image, to realize the object. It realizes the object directly. Whereas the second type of valid cognizer, that of inference, an inferential valid cognizer, this does rely on a correct reason. It's in dependence on a correct reason that the object is realized. Whereas the direct valid cognizer does not need a reason, but realizes the object directly. And the second difference is the inferential valid cognizer does utilize a meaning generality or a mental image. And a further difference between these two is that a direct valid cognizer has both divisions of consciousness that we heard about a few moments before, the sense consciousnesses and mental consciousnesses. These are all to be found within, these can all be found within direct valid cognizers, whereas an inferential valid cognizer only includes mental consciousnesses. There are no sense consciousnesses within inferential valid cognizers. An illustration that's easy to understand to differentiate a direct valid cognizer and an inferential valid cognizer is if we look out the windows, we see a load of trees. So we're seeing these trees directly. There's no utilization of a meaning generality or usage of a reason, a correct reason. We see the trees, we realize trees. So that's a direct valid cognizer. An inferential valid cognizer, that's now quite different. It's only mental, it's not sense, and it relies on a correct reason and a meaning generality. So if, for example, we see at a distance smoke arising from trees, we can only see smoke arising from trees, we can't see any fire, but independent on the reason of smoke arising from trees, we can infer that there is a fire. So that then is an illustration of an inferential valid cognizer. We're relying on a correct reason. This is happening with our mental consciousness, that independent on the correct reason of seeing smoke, we can mentally infer that there is fire. No sense, the sense consciousness hasn't observed fire, hasn't seen fire, but we know based on the correct reason that there is fire.
good.
And those of you who came to the teachings on dependent arising last year and engaged in those meditations, you'll be very familiar with the process leading to the arisal of an inferential valid cognizer. Because, as we've just heard, an inferential valid cognizer relies on a correct reason. So we covered many times how to meditate on selflessness of the persons. We went through the investigation that one does, the mental analysis that one does, and one goes through that entire meditation, coming to see that the self does not exist in the way that it appears to the mind. Rather, the self is a dependence arising. Because the self doesn't exist in the way that it appears, which is inherently, it's empty of existing in the way that it appears. It's empty of inherent existence. But rather, it's dependence on imputation by mind. So this understanding, this wisdom that has arisen, that that understands emptiness, this has come about in dependence on correct reasoning. So this is the kind of thinking that is referred to when we talk about an inferential valid cognizer. It's a mental consciousness that comes about in dependence on a correct reason. And that, and those who have been doing these meditations that we covered extensively last year will have a lot of experience of using reasoning in one's meditation.
So I'd
encourage you to investigate your mind and see when you're having a direct valor cognizer, when you're having an inferential valor cognizer. This has the great benefits, as was described earlier in the talk, but it also will help you remember what is being presented here, what the meaning of these terms are. Because both of these, direct valor cognizers and inferential valor cognizers, we all have many of them. So, for example, if we something that we see directly, that it will be a direct valid cognizer, because we realize it, we know it, just through seeing it, or through hearing it, or tasting it. So that would be an illustration of a direct valid cognizer. We know the object directly through that sense consciousness. And then an illustration of the inferential valid cognizer. So this is only mental, and it relies on reasoning, such as the illustration. We know that there is smoke because of the we know there's fire because of the smoke that we see. So this is something we hopefully don't see too many fires, but we use our inference a lot. For example, we may do something thinking we may get away with it, but someone else can use their inference and come to understand that we perhaps did something we shouldn't have. So let's say there's some cold beers at home, and you shouldn't be drinking them, but maybe you have some anyway. And then someone comes, and independent on smelling, for example, the smell of beer, then they will, independent on that correct reason, the smell of beer, they will use their mental consciousness and infer that someone here drank them, probably you, the only person here. Or maybe they'll see something on your facial expression or hear something in the way that you're speaking that could also be used, would also be a correct reason by which they could infer that you drank those beers. So this too would be an illustration of using an inferential valid cognizer. And this is where one doesn't know whether the direct valid cognizer, one knows directly through one sense or mental consciousness, one directly knows something. The inferential valid cognizer is only for the mental consciousness and depends on a reason. So keep that in mind on your way home, coming here tomorrow. Remind yourself, come to know yourselves better, and remember the meaning of the text better that way too. And in brief, tonight what we've looked at is a brief summary, and we started again to look at the most important division here, that of awarenesses. And we spoke about how awarenesses can be divided into sense and mental, and you're encouraged there to use this information to look at this process of how an object appears to your sense consciousness, and independent on that, a variety of mental consciousnesses come. To use this information, investigate this for yourself to see if it's true or not. And through gaining this knowledge and experience, one will come to see one's own inner workings, come to understand oneself better, and thereby gain a greater understanding of what leads to suffering, what leads to happiness, what ways of thinking should be adopted, what ways of thinking should be abandoned. Furthermore, now at the end we spoke about direct valid cognizers and inferential valid cognizers. The primary difference being a direct valid cognizer is where an object is directly realized without needing to go via reasoning, a correct reason. whereas an inferential valid cognizer requires reasoning. And this inferential valid cognizer is something that we strive to come through in our meditation, because we use analysis, we use investigation to come to understand ourselves better, to come to understand reality better. And this process then leads to the attainment of inferential valid cognition. So this, in brief, is what we've looked at tonight. So thank you, and then we'll continue from here tomorrow morning.